There we go. Oh, it gave a false start there for a minute. This is Jason Devereaux. You are listening to The Far Side of the Moon. Oops, let me get some of this stuff out of the way. Well, let me tell you, I just listened to the first part. Windy conditions are always tricky for sound quality and stuff like that. I think one of the most lucid recordings I've ever made, and of course the sound quality was so atrocious that you can pick out what I'm saying, but it's difficult. So. But that's the joy of The Far Side of the Moon, is that if you really want it, you're gonna have to want it. You know, it's not a question of this is and make it work. And that's just part of the fun of the thing. I haven't really worked out the technology. It's not going to be hard at all. Worked out the technology for I don't know if I'm going to make it a podcast in particular. But, you know, on a certain level, you might as well. And, well, anyway, it doesn't really matter. I was talking a little bit in the earlier recording about the psychic proximity principle, and some of the connotations of that, and I guess it kind of goes along with one of what I feel is one of the aspects of the Navigiri allegory that I've been working on for the majority of my life. It ends up kind of being my life's work. Although I'm doing other things for Pete's sake. So. And it is kind of a demystification of God. I guess in order to justify misconceptions people had about God, trying to harmonize some pretty interesting concepts that they had probably come up with over time. Whether it be Christian or whatever religion, whatever kind of weird spiritualism, I don't know, I'm sorry, I apologize for calling it weird, but it's some pretty wacky stuff out there. And God is really quite acceptable. I mean, because of the circumstances, you really have to approach him in a way that is in a way that works for him. Like, for instance, you know, here's a good analogy, I guess, is when you're going to an extremely rich person's house, you know, they might have a fence all around their property and a gate and a gatepost, and they might have one of those little intercom systems at the front, or it may have a key code, you know, to open up the gate so that you can proceed in and be with this person. And it isn't a question of, well, you know, you can give all kinds of preferences. Well, I don't want to have to do that, you know. That's just too difficult, or that's just too weird, or it doesn't make me feel good. So I'll just stay at the gate and yell until somebody comes. And surely somebody will come if I'm obnoxious enough, or, you know, something like that. And you go, no. That's, God is accessed via his methodology, you know, other ways don't work. Kind of like trying to call Jay on the telephone. I swear, I monitor all my calls. And I don't pick up the phone unless I'm either in the mood or somebody I know or somebody I want to talk to or whatever. You really have to announce yourself. And I find it's really effective because telemarketers, most of them have a system that until you say hello on your side, you know, when they call, there's like a computer system that waits for you to say hello. And if you never get around to saying hello, it just hangs up on you and goes on to the next one. I think it's mostly to make sure I don't know if you want to call them robocallers, but it's always trying to make sure that you're only connected to phone calls that actually hit a person. Ours starts out saying, you know, thank you for calling the number, okay? So there's no hello going on. And it's really great because you'd be surprised how many of those telemarketers they use that system. And it makes it so I don't have to be on a do not call list. I don't have to do one thing or another. I don't have to trust other technology to kind of, you know, make sure that I'm getting the kind of experience I desire. So if you want to talk to me, you know, people say, well, don't you have caller ID? I go, no, I have to pay for caller ID. And I have to get up and go to the phone to actually look at who's calling. I said, that's so good. I said, I can sit down, and if somebody wants to really talk to me, number one, they'll announce themselves, and, hi, Jay, this is, whatever. This is Mickey. And he'll go, are you there? So then I'll jump up and go and get the phone and say, yeah, I'm here. And it really has to do with that whole thing about accessibility. And I guess cocky people, and the majority of people are pretty cocky. You know, I'm not saying I'm some kind of special, uncocky sort of a guy. They look at, like, say, the telephone, for instance, as their own purview. You know, you have a telephone in order to be more accessible to them. And you have to understand, I pay for my telephone service. Therefore, I use it the way that I see fit. And, you know, and I don't, you know, it is a convenience for me. It is not specifically a convenience for you. And, you know, people say, oh, that's so rude. You go, what? What do you mean? And you go, hey, you know, I'm not obliged by law to answer that telephone every time it rings. I'm not obliged to do that at all. I much prefer email because email comes, you can sit there, you can think about it, you can craft a response. You can do it on your own, how do you call it? You can do it on your own time. When you give yourself over to the telephone, you're totally at somebody else's mercy. You know, you are kind of being controlled by the caller. Where with email, you're not controlled by the caller at all. Heck, you can, that message will sit there and wait for you unread as long as it has to. Forever. You can sit there and do nothing with it. You can sit there and never read it. You can sit there and read it and do nothing. You can do all kinds of stuff. And the guy, I wasn't really going to get off on that. It just kind of came up because I found it really, really interesting. How people expect things and how people treat each other. Yeah, not they're trying to be mean or trying to be rude, they just have an expectation. And when that expectation doesn't come to fruition for them, they get upset, you know. I think it comes from the old thing of when telephone was just about all we had for personal communication back and forth. And you would, there was only two states. Either A, you picked up the phone, which meant 500 other things were true, which was A, you were there to answer a question, B, you were actually present, you know. You could suppose all kinds of things. And if somebody didn't pick up that telephone, you could make the supposition that nobody was there, or that they simply were not taking calls. And that's really the only two things you could really suppose on anything. When caller ID came in, you had another possibility that somebody that once you rung up, they would look at the box and they would decide whether whether they want to talk to you or not, or they could ignore the phone call. That was not a possibility brought in by caller ID. But I really like my current system because it really acts as much like email as it can, you know. Answering machines are a wonderful thing. I love an answering machine because it keeps everybody kind of safe, and I kind of like that. And I know that makes me appear asocial, antisocial, I'm actually asocial, which means I don't really care. You know, I find a lot of social gatherings kind of disturbing, you know, disturb what I find. I would call ahead, you know, like say for home teaching, for instance. In the LDS church, they have a thing called home teaching. And you go and you visit people. You know, whether they come to church very often or not. You go and you visit them, you bring spiritual message. You're both basically there to kind of be an interface between them and the priesthood, honestly, in our case. So if the priest serves you better. You know, just trying to kind of keep in touch with you. Not really to keep tabs on you, but to keep in touch with you. So that you know that you're not forgotten, and so that they know what's going on, so that if help is needed, everybody feels comfortable about, number one, being able to offer the help, or being able to ask for the help. I'm really bad, and I think I got this way because you have to, with my work, too, it's really difficult to plan out how my day's going to go, because it's really quite odd. I don't know when I'm going to be in town. I don't know when I'm going to be out of town. I don't know, you know, because I take care of a large area. There's often travel involved. And on a not too wild basis, there's also, a lot of, I can overnight, with no notice at all, you know, to say, well, you're going to have to, you know, if I'm out doing something, it's going to take until 5 o'clock, I'm obliged to overnight where I am, especially now that I'm an hourly worker. I can't do overtime, my boss can't pay overtime. And so, when 5 o'clock rolls around, I have to stop doing what I'm doing. And that includes that I can't really travel. District travel can't happen after 5 o'clock. And, that means that I'm kind of, never check your mail while you're traveling. Bad thing. Pardon me. Anyway, so I'm in a circumstance where, yeah, where I'm not on a regular schedule at all. I cannot tell you specifically when I'm going to be anywhere. So calling ahead and saying I'm going to show up and we're going to do home teaching at such and such a time on such and such a day, I can almost guarantee that will be exactly when I'm not going to be there. And so I kind of got into the habit of just kind of showing up. And it's rude, and other people are really, really kind in taking care of that, but it's kind of just the circumstance. And, and so, I try to be accommodating of people who have a weird schedule, but are trying to take care of things. Although I'm probably the only one in my circumstance who really has a weird schedule. Everybody else I know has somewhat set one, you know? And, anyway, I had started out originally wanting to talk about the psychic proximity principle, and I think I was going to talk about kind of a corollary to it, which is, it's difficult to describe. When something really is going to be able to happen, I have tried diligently, I think for the last 16 or 17 years, to come to terms with Jukum Kari and staying in this area. And I simply can't. Lisa is a person who can just settle down. She has, as far as I know, Lisa has no great aspirations in life. I don't know if I do either, but I leave myself open for the possibility that it could happen one day. Oh, sorry. I keep telling myself I shouldn't walk in the morning, but it was going to be such a nice morning, I decided to do it. I think now the stomach's kind of paying for it. I really haven't got through with my sickness yet. And I need to. Although, probably more than that, I really need to work on my writing. I need to get the Ascendant Family written, done, composed, out of the thing, so, just like I was talking before in the previous recording about the whole concept of things that won't let you go, like, there's been whole years I haven't worked on what is now the Vigiary Project. It's changed me. And there's a whole story behind that, too. But, it doesn't make sense. won't let you go. Even if you, even if they lay dormant for a year or two, or even three or four, it's just something that's always niggling at you, that's always shaking at you, saying, this needs doing, this needs to be done. And, so, you know, I go back and I work on it. And, and it becomes this kind of cool thing. On the flip side is, I also find that I can't bring myself to do things that ultimately don't lead anywhere, or that are gonna, or that aren't accomplishing the larger goal I'm working for. Like, say, for instance, I've always said, you know what, I'm tired. You know, if I'm going to stay here, I want to make this house my own. I, you know, I want to make the changes I want to make. I want to do some changes. I want to put up to the antenna. You know, to do my listening and to do my latest venture radio stuff. But I can't bring myself to do it. I can't bring myself to do it. Because, by and large, doing these things will make it more difficult to sell the house. It's not impossible, but let me tell you, it won't help with the sale. And, so I find myself unable to get in. Or, when I say, okay, well, I guess stick around, start looking around for someplace else to live in Tucumcari or in the environs around it. Right now, the thing was that since our kids are going to school at San Juan, it might be advantageous on several levels to move to San Juan. You know, it's a little bitty town, and, where Tucumcari has cheap housing, San Juan is even cheaper, depending on what you're going to put up with. And I can't bring myself to do it. I can't bring myself to do it. So I told myself that for the next phase of my life, I'll most likely be renting places to live. Because I just don't know what circumstances are going to take me, you know. I have to retain some stability for my family. My kids need to have a somewhat stable place to go to school. We still want a stable place to live. Very stable. I am not. So wherever Lisa lives ends up being home base. And I have said that as part of whatever's going to be happening over the next, hopefully, year or so, I don't want to take that long, will necessitate the home base moving to Europe. And, you know, Lisa really liked Anderson High School, and she still does. And we, and we're gonna, that's kind of the direction I'm looking for where we need to put our home base. You know, it doesn't really have anything to do with what I'm doing, you know. Most of the things I do, or most of the things that I'm working on, writing and speaking and lecturing, the 2004 affirmation of what I will be doing in the future, they don't depend on place particularly. I mean, yes, the majority of the things I'm doing gravitate towards Europe, and it makes sense to live in Europe, even if it's just for a period. Although my intention is to go and never come back. And I guess that comes with me trying to skew what's happening. But, as part of the psychic proximity principle, or how God can communicate with man, how God starts to get men and women to where they need to be doing the things they need to be doing. I feel that circumstances and that slight magnetism continue to indicate that we're starting to close out here. You know, it'll be kind of obvious if it comes back where we're going to have a change in leadership here. It happens every once in a year, especially when the current leader moves, which is what's happening. People all look at me and say, "Oh, you're gonna be the next branch president." I'm not saying I'm not gonna be. Number one, I don't think I'm going to be. I think I'm on my way out. Now that doesn't preclude the fact that while I'm working on leaving, they'll call me anyway. I have not made a secret that I was on the way out this summer. And people said, "Boy, we're glad you didn't leave." And you're going, "What gives you the impression that I'm not still in the midst of working on leaving?" Just because it's not going the way that I had originally planned. You know, it's not going to be me going back to school and getting my master's degree and stuff like that. Be working on a whole nother thing. And but anyway, you know, so when people say, "Well, how do you know you're going to do something? How do you know it's going to be Shetland?" And you go, "I don't know precisely." You really never do. It ends up being more of this is where thoughts and impressions and ideas have kind of led me. It could lead me further on. But for right now, it's not, and it hasn't for a little while. Man, how long am I going to be behind this guy? I'm already very unhappy with the fact that I'm stuck behind this fella. I'm going to tell him. I'm going to pull this. Hope he doesn't mind. That I'm just going to go around him. So I'm going to end up all the way in Clovis. Anyway, so the second proximity stuff, you know, Shetland and other things, seems to, you know, it really has to do a lot with Plan B, too. I have the Plan B, which is going to be the place in the United States that has a similar climate than Shetland. Somewhat similar, not really amazingly similar, which is Pacific Northwest, southeast Alaska, there's been more and more of, don't do that, Jay. Don't do that. Lisa doesn't want to do it. And all those things just kind of fell apart. Getting work there. Of course, Shetland getting work there fell apart pretty easy. But when it came to Alaska, after I had done the whole flurry of putting in applications, and then all of a sudden, the flood of interviews came back. And it was amazing. I was impressed. And what impressed me the most was, out of like maybe a dozen interviews that I did, nothing, which is odd. Usually, if I interview for a job, I tend to get it. And in this case, I didn't get any of them. And, even to the point to where I had a couple more opportunities to interview for something, and I just said, you know what, time has passed, I'm not, circumstances have changed, I'm not going to. So, Alaska has kind of faded off, but Shetland has not. And let me tell you, there is no logical way that I can get to Shetland and stay there for more than 6 months. But that's kind of required for my kids, If you have your kids in school, you need to have them there longer than 6 months. School takes longer than that. Ta-da! Anyway, so what I find compelling about the whole thing is not only what things I keep getting drawn to and I can't get away from, but also the other things that seem to be a reasonable alternative, probably even more reasonable than the actual goal. And the fact that they're not working, that they're falling apart. It's kind of this weird feeling out what you should do and which direction you should go and where God wants you to be and what God wants you to do. And it's got kind of a carrot and a stick kind of mentality. It's very soft. Like I said, it's like very light magnetism. It's there. If you listen for it, you can feel it. But it's also, it isn't so strong a magnetism that it draws you in no matter what. You can easily avoid it. So, yeah, it's this whole feeling around. What do you keep coming back to? What do you go toward? And then it just kind of goes, well, I'm not feeling like that's a leading. You start getting the impression and feeling around what you should be doing and where you should be going. People say, oh, Jay's so good at computers, he needs to get really good at computers, go and get his degree in it. And I have tried a couple of times. I put forth some effort in trying to. In going in that direction. Which would seem the most logical thing to do, of course. But I don't, I still actually retain an attitude about a career in computers that I had when I was a teenager. There was a few opportunities. I'm old enough that high school computer programs weren't prevalent at all. And I lived in places where they weren't very prevalent, although I did get kind of attached to them sometimes over time, doing stuff, little light programs and stuff like that. Anyway, but it's never been anything beyond that. You know, I've always said, you know, I said computers are a tool. I use them as tools over time. I have gotten to where I am getting elegant in my use of tools, and I am fashioning more elegant tools. Like I said, it's more of an elegant thing. But I don't, but it's just like wanting to get my, to finally make changes to my house that will make it mine, and not doing it. I can't bring myself to do it. I can't bring myself to go back to school to study computers. It's the wrong direction. It's the wrong direction, and it would be a distraction from what I need to be doing, at least at this point. So, I find it really interesting ferreting out what needs to happen, and all of the inspiration, all of the prompting to, number one, get passports in order, have all this stuff ready, so if at any time the opportunity presents itself and you've got to go right then, you can. I am ready at a moment's notice. Snatch up my passport, go and get a fast ticket, and fly to another country, any place in the world. I've got a passport, you know, and the places I'm likely to gonna need to go don't need an immediate visa. You know, I can just go through. And that there is going to be and that the opportunity is going to come up, and I need to be ready, and so I am ready now. And my whole family is. We can all travel now. Even Matthew has his passport. He's good to go, too. And, you know, there was several other things to... A few other promptings that I got. I don't know where this stuff leaves immediately. Or what it wants me to do. I sat down and I said, okay, dude, if you're going to get serious about computers, or if you're going to do more in computers, you really need to get into management. And I made an effort. I applied for jobs to do such a thing. Got callbacks on some of them. Didn't happen. And as I did, it just kind of faded away. And by and large, that's kind of what happened. And that's big part for me of the psychic proximity principle. You know, where you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to be doing, you're attracted to it almost magnetically. And if you are willing to answer that call, it's almost like magic. You will be doing what you're supposed to be doing. You will be doing the thing that fulfills you. You will be doing the thing that makes you happy. And chances are excellent that it will provide you a good income. That you will have every mark of success that anybody would say, oh wow, there's success. And people will say, well, how did you get there? And you're almost hard pressed to say how it happened. you know, some people are very clear. I thought I wanted to be an engineer. I always wanted to be an engineer, so I went to school and I became an engineer, and then I got good, and yada, 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 you know. Sometimes the career path is simple and clear, and it doesn't present any particular obstacle, or it isn't really strange. Now that's not me. Jay's a strange fella, and he's got strange things going on, and it isn't a question of what I don't think there is a degree in what I hope to do. Anthropology may very well be close, but, you know, no cigar. And, honestly, I don't think I'll be getting jobs or pursuing opportunities or whatever based specifically on my education. You know, it's going to be based more specifically on my philosophical bent, my talents, my things like that. There may, you know, college may still be out there again, gaining a master's or a PhD in something. But only if that leads to something, you know, whether it's a government post or teaching more actively. But I still am sticking with writer, speaker, lecturer. Type of thing. And we'll really see where it goes, where it comes from. And as I look at Shetland, and as I see what connections I have been able to see, I continue to be drawn to it. That this book I'm doing. It's kind of a big person's guide to why you need to go to Shetland and why you need to do certain things. And it kind of sets for me a guidebook for why I would go over there. Bigger than I like the climate or bigger than I want to get some distance from congestion and the press of man, things like that. That there is something larger that, of which these other things have been only like symptoms or only, I don't think there's words for it. Of which these have only been kind of almost catalysts to getting me to look at that place and to see it and to know it for what it is. You know, constantly poring over maps, little off the beaten path sort of thing. And what brings one, how Lisa was actually the first one to latch onto a Scottish Isle. It was Gia. They had a little inn or a hotel, restaurant. That was looking for management. She said, I can do that. And so we looked at that and we looked around and I started looking around and we kind of wound our way up the Western Isles of Scotland. I jumped right over Orkney. I don't know why I did that. Of all of Scottish Isles, the one that I probably got introduced first was Orkney. The Orkney Islands for simply, I like Mary Stuart's Merlin trilogy. although it ended up being four books, and I find that the fourth book was the book that I felt most drawn to, and a lot of it takes place in Orkney. And I found it really interesting that when time came to start looking, I left right over Orkney and went straight to Shetland. Probably the most un-Scottish place in Scotland. And the whole question is, why would a libertarian-minded guy find anything interesting about any part of Europe? Europe is not known for libertarianism at all. Libertarianism is you know, a crowd of 10 people, where the United States is a crowd of 100. And, you know, what? But the amazing thing is, Shetland is probably one of the places where something like that could take root. If anything can be the shining beacon, if any place can be the jewel on the sea, which is actually kind of part of that song I can Shetland, jewel on the sea, Shetland. So anyway, so and I've never come with any more words to it yet. You know, there's just kind of this little bit of the chorus, you know, and it's got kind of and you know, you throw in a bit of a Viking horn, you know, which makes it scare the crap out of you. And you know, and Shetland really is that kind of a place. And there's a certain timeline here. Scottish independence referendum is coming up in 2014. We're now coming to the end of 2012, the very end of 2012, which means that we only have probably about 18 months or so in order to take advantage of this interesting interplay, this interesting thing. And you know, I have no idea where it's going to go. And the only thing I have to do, at least at this point, is to prevent it and to see what happens. For all I know, there's already a rising foment of discontent or a need for something else, a need for change, and all it needs is the catalyst. And that's what I end up really being on a lot of different levels. I think I did a whole recording probably about a week or a week and a half ago on being a catalyst. And, you know, that's often what I am. You know, when people think of leadership, they often think of a guy with a title. And I really don't have a title. Even in the LDS church, I've always found interesting. I am certainly not your typical leader, you know. I think more than anything else, I can get things done. Things that need to be done, I get them done. And I have become a leader that way. I'm the clerk. I kind of run things. I'm almost the chief operating officer of my local branch, which is fine. That doesn't bother me at all. But I do. I in leadership circles, I tend to be a catalyst. I tend to make things happen that probably need to happen. I don't end up being the one that actually does it, but it's almost like I end up being the inspiration that gets it going. Whether it is the Santa Rosa group, I think I was instrumental at the very beginning of the formation of the Fort Sumter branch. And I'm not going to take credit for it. Other people did all the real work. Probably the only thing I did was to plant a seed or to throw the ground and say, this would be a good spot or whatever. I can only imagine other people look at me with confusion and say, I don't comprehend it, you know. You would probably do well doing any number of jobs, but yet God has put you. And you go, yes, I understand, I'm a camel. But I am not supposed to be the day-to-day leader of anything. Because I end up being almost the idea man. That simply puts it in, you know, other people execute it. Other people execute it. But I can, you know. I am almost like an extension of the spirit with skin. And that's not to be cocky. Not to be cocky at all. You know. It doesn't manifest itself that way. And so when people have said, well, someday you're going to be the best president, you go, okay. I think over time, I said, you know what, I'm not saying I won't be the branch president. I said, I will be a very different sort of branch president. Mostly as a separation. And we need to open ourselves, you know, if there is a need for people to open themselves up to new possibilities, I'm often helpful with that. I do that kind of action a lot. And, it isn't really so much, but I find it interesting. In the past, that's what I've done. I think I'm getting better at instigating things that need to happen without doing them. I know, it sounds weird. Sounds weird to me. So I'm sitting here trying to feel this out. Let me tell you, the feeling of this stuff out is an interesting process. To watch it being done, you would think someone has done it to me. And I have become accustomed to people saying, you're done. Or people saying, why do you think that's what you should do? You know? And practically, on the ground, when people are looking at it, they say, Jake, but you were wrong. You said you were going to go off and go to school, and now you're not. Why are you still pursuing this? Don't you understand? Stuff will be pursued. You go, because it cannot be let go. There's something there. And if there be something there, we press said, I didn't think you were going to go on a walk for a little while. You're going to walk during noontime forward. And especially now that I don't have to especially now that I don't need to that I have to take a full lunch. I don't need an hour. In fact, having an hour to eat causes me trouble. I'll go to a buffet and I'll sit there for an hour and I'll stuff myself for it. So I have to kind of avoid, I have to avoid buffets. You know, you don't want all you can eat because I will. I'll eat it all. And, I get really frustrated with God because I'm not getting to where I want to be, or I'm not getting someplace quickly enough. I think that's my biggest thing, is chasing with being where I am. I feel bad sometimes because, you know what? I don't think I've still gotten to the point where I've made a wrong turn. You know, people say, oh, Jay, you should take more computer classes when you were young. I didn't think it was, strangely enough. Anyway. Oh. Sleepy. I had trouble sleeping last night. I kept waking up all of a sudden. In fact, I don't even know if I really got to sleep particularly. And, I attribute it to the fact that I slept pretty well Sunday afternoon, which took away any need to sleep later on. And, I tend to do better if I... If I stay awake until I'm tired, that tends to work really well for me. And then you go to sleep when you're tired. If I go to sleep when I'm not tired, well, I have problems. So, excuse me. I think that's all I need to do some more of. Just simply doing this. Sleep more, or no. I still prefer waking up early, as opposed to staying up late. But come on. Why is my thing not... through on? Here we go. There we go. Oh, this is tricky. So yeah, you know, the whole psychic proximity principle really has to do about feeling out where you should go, what you should be doing. I'm probably taking it to a abnormal level. But that's fine, you know? Whatever seems like, you know, the right thing to do, probably a decently good thing to do. And, a better way to behave is to spend your time looking and listening and, trying to figure out where you fit in. I've always struggled with that on a certain level. But oh, we go forward anyway. And are there great and amazing things in the future? There's got to be. You don't go wandering down, and not really wandering, you don't go feeling down some road without stumbling onto something. It's almost kind of a form of divination, and that's where you find water in the desert. That's where you find gold up in the mountains. That's where, you know, that's where amazing things are, is at the end of a search, a journey. And so, or during a journey, maybe it's not even the end of a journey. Along a path to which you go. So, anyway. That is what's happening. I need to remind myself of that on a regular basis. About the psychic proximity principle. I know people say, that's a weird way to talk about this. And you go, well, it's kind of a secular term for a spiritual path. Oh, I'm really to my destination. So now it's probably an excellent time to stop recording and get back to life. Yeah, it's been about an hour, so that's about normal. Alright, well, have a wonderful day. This is Jason Nembro. You're listening to The Far Side.